Hello, this is the first in what may be a series of podcasts from council staff on policy developments. We're very aware that we often get guests in to talk about policy, but meanwhile, we're working on a variety of issues, and this is just an informal opportunity to talk about some of our top picks of the month. I'm joined by Josh Niederost, our Senior Policy and Public Affairs Officer, who all of you will know, I think. And we had a chat about what we might want to focus on today. We've picked the NHS White Paper and developments in further education and something about Office for Students, consultations, and augur. We wanted to start with the recent NHS White Paper. It's quite a beast of a paper, and of course, it's been some time coming. I was reflecting from a personal point of view, because I've worked in health policy for some time, that this is really a part of development since 2012. In 2012, I returned from maternity leave to find that the NHS had been turned on its head with a whole bunch of new acronyms to learn. What we saw then was the gradual unpicking of the Lansley reforms with 2014's five-year forward view, and then the development of vanguards and new models of care in 2015. We've also seen after that the development of sustainability and transformation partnerships, and more recently in 2019, the NHS long-term plan with aspirations for integrated care systems. You'll all be aware that things have moved apace since then. And integration of services is happening and has been happening around the country. What this NHS White Paper does is to attempt to formalise that and to ensure that all of England will be covered by integrated care systems. These integrated care systems will be made up of both an ICS NHS body and an ICS Health and Care Partnership, which is the part that will include local government and other partners. The key themes of the White Paper are moving towards greater integration of services, reducing bureaucracy and organisational barriers, easing procurement in the NHS. We're also going to see, finally, a full merger of NHS England and NHS Improvement. You can see in the paper that there are also changes to the relationship between the Secretary of State for Health and NHS England. The way I read this, the initial intention of the reforms to make NHS England completely independent of politics is slightly being unpicked. The reforms this time will introduce a duty to collaborate with a triple aim across the system of better health and well-being, quality health services, and sustainable use of NHS resources. I think the key for us is that we will see over the next few years the ICS is evolving and changes to the way that we're able to engage. We know already that HEE is aiming to work with ICSs on digital management system for placements and on the distribution of NHS funding. As I looked through the White Paper, I was also looking for other things that might impact us. One thing that really jumps out is the abolition of LetBees, which was set up in 2012. We need to think about what that means for our involvement in workforce planning. We know that LetBee functions will be undertaken by HEE through regional workforce and people boards, and these will now have oversight of workforce education and training. But I think universities also need to think about how they're going to fit in with the new ICS structure. It may be over time that there's scope for you to work with your ICS Health and Care Partnership, which is the part of the ICS which will include wider stakeholders. One interesting thing about the White Paper is the announcement that the Secretary of State for Health will publish a document on workforce planning and supply at national, regional, and local level. I understand this was a call by the RCN, and it's also a call that we've made repeatedly in recent years. This will describe the workforce planning and supply system to everybody, including the roles of the DHSC, arm's length bodies, NHS bodies, and others, and how they work together. The other big thing, which absolutely affects our wider sector, is an indication of changes to professional regulation. The government hopes to tackle what it calls a rigid and complex model of professional regulation. Josh, this is absolutely your work area. I wondered if you could offer some reflections on how this links with what's happened in recent years.
Thank you, Fleur. And yes, it is something that our members should be very much watching. The White Paper outlines some quite interesting changes to the future of professional regulation. which is bound up in changes to Section 60 of the 1999 Health Act. And this white paper proposes to change some of those rules and allow the Secretary of State greater powers. Now, these powers include the power to remove the profession from regulation and also potentially the power to abolish an individual health and care regulator. These developments have been perhaps a long time coming. We've been working on these particular areas for a number of years, most particularly including the promoting professionalism and reforming regulation work that's been going on across the UK for a period of time. And the government produced some findings on that in 2019. As a council, we're very supportive of proportional regulatory oversight, risk-based and outcome-focused regulation. And, you know, these changes to some extent may enable that. I think we, you know, a reduction in the number of regulators could see developments in savings and efficiency and greater consistency, and also the potential powers of delegating functions. So the quality assurance function of a regulator could be delivered by one regulator as opposed to every individual regulator. However, for our members, I don't see the government abolishing the NMC or abolishing the HCPC. HCPC is a multi-professional regulator and has many professions that it's already regulating. And the NMC is, you know, such a large regulator of such important professions. So I don't see the NMC and the HCPC threatened in the way that perhaps some other regulators are.
It's definitely one for the smaller professions, isn't it, Josh?
Definitely. I think that seems to be potential focus of the government. And in terms of you know, powers to remove certain professions from regulation, again, I very much doubt that any of our regulated professions would fall into that category. And as a council, we're quite supportive of the Professional Standards Authority's Right Touch regulatory work, which looks at, you know, risks and factors in why and how particular professions should be regulated.
I think that it may affect some of our members in a slightly more indirect way, because some of the very small subjects are taught within our health faculties. So although they're not subjects that the council normally represents, I'm just aware that if there are regulatory changes to some of those smaller healthcare courses, it may have an impact. I think those are the main items on the NHS white paper. One of the other things we've been looking at, Josh, is changes to further education. And this is an area that you absolutely lead on. I know you've done a lot of work with members lately. I was wondering if you could reflect on some of the key things that are coming up there.
Yes, so the government's been very busy lately. Not only has it done a white paper on reforms to the NHS, but in January 2021, it published a Skills for Jobs white paper, which is really looking about you know, reforms to further education and level 4 and 5 education in England. And the government's real intention here, or stated intention, is to increase flexibility for people to access learning throughout their lifetimes. There is, as I say, a big focus on the FE sector, which the government sees as key to the levelling up agenda in England. And as part of those reforms, there is a commitment to a lifetime skills guarantee. And I think it's important for our members to just be aware of what that looks like, because I think their recruitment leads will have to very much be aware of some of these changes. There's sort of three main areas that I would want to highlight within the lifetime skills guarantee. Firstly, there's a lifelong learning loan, and this is a guarantee from 2025 of funding for the equivalent of 4 years of post 18 education. From 2021-22, there's also going to be an offer for all adults to achieve their first full advanced level 3 qualification. And this will be funded with money up to £95 million in that year via the National Skills Fund. And alongside this, there is obviously the continued rollout of T-levels and reform to higher technical qualifications at level 4 and 5. There is a big focus on the role that employers play at a local level. And there is the development of local skills improvement plans, which brings together FE colleges, employers, and other stakeholders to understand local skills gaps and areas of focus. So I think it's very important to say to our members two things, really. One is that their recruitment leads will have to be very much aware of all of these developments. It's increasingly a crowded space in that level 3, level 4, level 5 area. not only in terms of apprenticeships, and you know, our members will be delivering nursing associate apprenticeships across England, but also in new higher technical qualifications, and also at level three, the T levels. And there will be the potential for competing demands on placement capacity in this space. It's really important for our members to be aware of this. But I think our key messages actually to government on this is that higher education institutions and universities are also key to levelling up, not just further education colleges. And our members work really closely with further education colleges all across the country.
Josh, we've had some quite pointed conversations in recent months around the nursing associate agenda, haven't we? Because we can see further education colleges looking at that part of the market and thinking about where their role might be, particularly with regards to cold spots in the country. What are your thoughts on that?
So I think that my concern really is that these new qualifications, particularly the higher technical qualifications alongside apprenticeships, could add to some confusion for applicants who are considering their future. And I think, you know, we need to be really clear, and the system needs to be really clear about different options for different individuals. I don't think these reforms will necessarily solve issues regarding so-called cold spots in parts of England. I think developments around blended learning are most likely to potentially solve issues in that space. But I think, you know, it forces us to focus more on our nursing associate work and our continued lobbying in this area for nursing associates who are paying fees to have access to maintenance grants, which is a continued key ask of ours of central government.
And we continue to lobby on that.
Yeah.
We've been looking at OFS activity, and we are expecting any day the OFS to consult on the changes it was asked by government to make to its teaching grant allocations. For us as a council, there's very little to grumble about in the recommendations, because it's absolutely clear that they're setting out to protect strategic subjects, and healthcare is right up there. But of course, universities don't work in complete silos, financially speaking. And I would expect a massive amount of interest from the sector, particularly around London institution funding with the proposed removal of the London weighting. I think all of your universities will be looking at affordability across their different programmes. There's a clear shift in government thinking away from subsidisation of subjects just because they're high cost, to also looking at whether they're strategically important. And that is obviously a very political move. We've lobbied so hard since 2016 to retain subsidies for our subjects, and we will continue to do so if there's another consultation. My understanding is that the OFS may not choose to implement the government's recommendations exactly as planned, following the responses they get. And I have no doubt that universities will be raising issues about cross-subsidisation of subjects, and also about how moves will affect different demographic groups across the country. The other thing we're expecting further consultation on, apparently this spring, is Augar. I mean, I'm not surprised at all that this has been so delayed, given the pressure of other policy priorities in government. And the interim response was underwhelming, to say the least. It said very little, mostly just repeating what was being said in other papers. And Augar includes some very tough nuts to crack. I think moving towards more modular systems of HEE is something the government might discuss again. But they've also proposed changes to student finance system, and that is going to be really, really difficult to tackle. So I'm not holding my breath on that. But of course, if we get a consultation, we'll engage with members and represent your interests in the usual way. Josh, have you got any final thoughts today?
I just wanted to end by really looking a bit to what I'm going to be working on over the next month. And as parliamentary elections are taking place in May in Scotland and Wales, we're very much focused on developing manifestos for those two countries, working in close collaboration with our members to ensure their key asks are front and centre in the minds of politicians.
Super. We're going to end this today. Let us know your feedback. If this is a format that works for members, we will try and do them more often, because we know it gives your eyes a rest and you can do it while you unload the dishwasher. So let us know. Thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Fleur. Goodbye.
Bye.